Blog Talk Radio.
Still feeling the pain from exiting the womb of ignorance into a world designed to kill me at birth. I am protected. The Elder Council consisting of Grand Grand and Baba, Doc Jones and Mama Ya, Lucky, Stormy, and then Antoinette and Geraldine, Doc Sobo, Sister Parsi, and Brother DeVril send forth the energy to make us feel our work is not in vain. Glory be unto their name, for they train us to adhere to the teachings of Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey,
by way of MasterGrio.com. As usual, we always want to send Sister Jackie a strong black shout out for allowing us the responsibility as well as the pleasure of listening and learning and teaching the people all at the same time. How you doing today, big bro?
Man, I am that I am, brother.
I understand. As we always say, trying to overthrow white supremacy.
Yes,
if our children grow up singing "We Shall Overcome," then my living has been in vain. Indeed, indeed. Well, big bro, as usual, we got some mess going on here in the city of Memphis, and it's not just the state of Tennessee or the city of Memphis. All around the world, same song.
Yeah, you know, but
it's just very, very funny. We were talking the other week and made the comment that, what's that? That girl running for vice president with McCain?
Palin,
yeah, Palin. She kills a moose and she makes the, you know, front page of the paper with the moose standing, but, you know, with the dead moose and everything.
Yes,
Mike Vick fights some pit bulls, he get jail time.
Of course.
You know, so the injustice system is just that, an injustice system. As Peter Tosh would put it, the shistem.
Exactly.
Exactly, man. And as usual, man, you know, we'll jump right into it. There's another case of a black man being murdered in Memphis by the pigs. And this time, it's a black pig and not a white pig. And that offers me, you know, I'm really not surprised because a whole lot of people think that once they assimilate with white folk, they actually think they can do what white folk do. But as our black politicians find out soon enough, you ain't them.
Exactly.
You ain't them. And it's just a sad thing to see that the value of a black life is still non-existent even to black policemen. And we do have a very special guest calling in on this evening. We're going to be speaking with Sister Rosa Clemente of the Green Party. And we're going to get to hear her platform. She's actually running with Sister Cynthia McKinney. And we will call them the people's politicians.
You know, if anybody,
you know, would make me have any kind of faith in the political system of America, it would be those two sisters there. So you all stay tuned. We're going to get a chance to talk with her very shortly. And we want to get into this very, very quickly before we bring Sister Rosa Clemente on. Thaddeus Matthews is always on top of a whole lot of social issues that go on in the city. He was pretty much the first one to break this story. So this is coming directly off of his website. Memphis police are trying to cover up the killing of Reginald Poynter by one of their own. And this is speaking from the words of Brother Thaddeus Matthews. Sunday, I accompanied Miss Shirley Wilson, mother of Reginald Poynter, who was shot and killed last Tuesday, to N.J. Ford's and Son's funeral home. Wilson's son was shot down by undercover police officer Jerry Hampton, who along with his partner Lewis Brown gave chase to Poynter after FedEx security guards, who were chasing the 24-year-old, stated that it seemed he was prowling cars parked on the Tullahoma Street. Ms. Wilson was also accompanied by several family members who requested that I take pictures of Poynter to be placed on this website so that the truth about his death would not be covered up. Looking at the body of Reginald Poynter, I now understand why Memphis Police Department has issued no statement concerning the shooting. It's very apparent that Poynter was not only shot, but beaten. But what led to the use of deadly force by Officer Hampton? Sources out of 201 Poplar told me last Wednesday that the shooting could not be justified and that Poynter had no weapon on him or any device that could be used to break in cars. So why is he dead? And an unwritten policy among police officers that if they have to chase you, you will go to the med because you will be issued an ass whooping. The left side of Poynter's face is badly swollen. Plus, you can see bruises around his left side of his forehead and his eye. There are also bruises in his chest, left side, and his left and right arms are both swollen and bruised. The bullet from the .40 caliber that Memphis police officers carry at close range will go through a body, but there is no exit wound, so I'm led to believe that Poynter was being beaten, got loose, and ran, and then was shot down by Hampton. The wound to the left arm shows that the bullet grazed the arm prior to entering Poynter's body, so it's possible that Hampton shot Poynter because he tried to get away from the beating that he was receiving, especially since it could not be proven that he had committed any crime, because surely Poynter wasn't beaten after he was shot. It is possible that the bruises and the swollen spots on the body of Reginald Poynter come from nightsticks or maybe after being stoned. Either way, Memphis Police Department officers and FedEx security present, there was no reason for deadly force to be used on the 5'5", 125-pound, 24-year-old. From the appearance of the body, he was no threat to the officers. So again, why is he dead? And that's directly off of the website of Brother Thaddeus Matthews. And also he has pictures of the young man at the morgue office. And this brother is messed up. His body is swollen, as he said in the article. The brother has bruises on his eyes, I mean, ribs. I mean, they messed this brother up and then shot him. And they should be held accountable. What are your thoughts on that, Brother Yele?
Well, unfortunately, man, growing up in the hills of Memphis, Tennessee, it's not an isolated incident. You know, this story has been told for as long as I am old, bro.
Yeah.
It's a shame that it is still continuing in 2008. It's a shame that they're continuing to get away with doing this to an African without any recourse, brother. Here it is, just like Brother Thaddeus says, why is he dead? At 125 pounds, and you got three trained officers, why is this brother dead? But we know in the black community that it's a well-known fact, if you have to, if the police have to chase you, that's an automatic whooping.
Yeah.
That's just the way it goes. If you fight back, you die. But if you run, you're going to take a whooping, and you better pray that you live through the whooping.
Yeah.
It's a well-known fact that when they pick you up, before you go to the precinct to be booked, that they take you behind buildings or old schools or railroad tracks and beat you first. It's just a well-known fact. But the sad part about it is the killing of one African by another African. That's the sad part right there, brother. Because if you remove the blue uniform from the culprits that did the killing, they themselves would be suspect in the eyes of everybody else.
Exactly.
So it could very well be them laying in the morgue. And surely they would want someone to find out what happened to them.
Exactly, exactly. And we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that this case does not die until justice is rendered. And the definition of justice is the reward for good and the punishment for evil. And we mean that. We mean that. I mean, fiercely. We really do mean that. The local media has not uttered a word about it. I haven't seen it at all.
Not one
I think
word.
There was an article in a commercial appeal about it, but, you know, no big hoopla.
Well, they mentioned it the day that it happened, but I hadn't heard anything since then.
Yeah, neither have I. Neither have I.
And if Brother Thaddeus had not taken the pictures and caused a resurgence of people wanting to find out what's going on with this case, then it probably would have been swept up under the rug, just like so many countless thousands of other African deaths have been swept under the rug.
Exactly, exactly. So we do want to thank Brother Thaddeus for bringing this to the light and posting those pictures on the website, and also to Brother Pointer's mother, Sister Wilson. That was a very brave thing of her, you know, to risk that privacy. And I know it's got to be very hard to see your child on the internet in that condition. But she realizes the importance, you know, of educating the people.
Exactly.
So we definitely want to thank her for her bravery and her dedication to her fight for these terrorists. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
And definitely our condolences to the family at that time of bereavement.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, brother, I think we have Sister Rose on the line now. Are you there, sister?
I'm here.
Hey there. How you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm great.
Wonderful.
Hey, sister, how you doing?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me. Actually, it's probably the best time I could have been on. I know I was supposed to be on many moons ago, but the campaign changes every day, so thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here tonight.
Oh, not a problem.
No
thank
problem.
You for spending your time with us. We know how busy you have to be, you know, doing
exactly.
That. We always say that, you know, we have lost. We overstand the fact that the American political system needs to be overhauled, you know, and not repaired. But you and Sister McKinney, you know, y'all are the people's politicians, you know what I'm saying? And we
exactly.
wouldn't even really refer to y'all as politicians, really. You know, y'all are people who overstand the people. You got your ear close to the ground, as the chairman will say. And very quickly, just introduce yourself to the listening crowd so they'll know who you really are.
Well, first, I also send my condolences to the Pointer family. I got an email about that and went to the website earlier today. And most of my activism, especially after college, has come around the issue of police murder and violence, starting with the Amadou Diallo trial and the 40 other, actually 60 some other brothers and sisters lost between the Diallo shooting and 98, 41 shots to the Sean Bell shooting, 50 shots to the recent killing of a mentally unstable man that was half naked and was tasered by the NYPD as opposed to psychiatric services being called onto the scene. So, you know, it's a good time to be on because I think there's such a fallacy, and I'm actually very afraid now, more so for our people, because if Senator Barack Obama gets in there, I have a very bad feeling that the next day there will be many police officers that will feel extra emboldened to be extra brutal in our community because they know they have a president in office who has never sided with the people on one case of police brutality And this is a person that comes from Chicago, Illinois. Really, when we think about torture and modern-day torture of the police departments, it was Chicago that perfected this method in the 60s and 70s. So, you know, it's very interesting, right, that here we are talking about electoral politics and another mother has lost her son at the hands of the police.
Exactly. Exactly. And want to just let the listening crowd know that she is not, you know, fabricating any story. This sister here has been in the field working against police terrorism for a very, very, very long time. And she means what she says and says what she means and does what she says she's going to do. You know, a sister that we have grown to have a whole lot of respect for personally and professionally. I mean, just a real good sister to be around. And as you said, though, sister, you know, and you know, to the millions of brothers and sisters who are in love with Barack Obama, it's not like we're trying to bad talk the brother or anything, but I mean, it is what it is. A sister called in on the Tom Joyner Morning Show the other day. You remember that, ELA?
Uh-huh.
And the sister called in, Sister Rosa, and she was like, you know, all this hoopla about Obama and McCain, neither one of them have said anything about the poor people, the working poor. You know, only thing they're concerned about is the middle class and the rich people, not a word about the working poor.
Right.
And the sister is just correct. You know, what are you all's thoughts on that?
Well, I come from a background since college of being a community organizer, and then in the early aftermath of 9/11, I became very involved in this kind of United States hip-hop activism arena, which has been, you know, a pretty good and powerful place to be up until recently. And in 2004, I helped found the National Hip-Hop Political Convention. I'm also founder of REACH, which is a media justice coalition targeting MS Communications, also a member of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, and a lot of work around political prisoners and an affinity of work around Puerto Rican independence since I'm Boricua. That's where my family's from. And a lot of journalism work after Hurricane Katrina. I was there 10 days after reporting. I was actually the only young journalist of color on the ground, not from a mainstream kind of media outlet. And so I've definitely been on the ground. So for me, I haven't voted Democrat. I've never been, I think maybe one time when I was probably 18 or 19, I obviously voted as a Democrat. But after that, and I became politically aware of the dualopoly of a two-party system, I was always a Green Party member, which is interesting because in this run, people will just assume that everyone is a Democrat or Republican and we're trying to change them. And in fact, when I got the call from Cynthia when she asked me to be her running mate, my intention was never to change a Democrat or a Republican. I really could care less about people who believe that the Democratic Party is actually going to do something. It's been pretty clear, particularly since 2006 when Nancy Pelosi and John Conyers and all of them won back the Congress and they promised that they would stop the war and they didn't. And they promised that they would impeach George Bush and they didn't. The two things that the Democratic Party, the two reasons they even took control in 06 was because of the progressive movement in this country, some of the left and a lot of the anti-war movement. And within 3 days, they turned their backs on millions of people. So, you know, I think the fact that the sister first got on Tom Joyner is a big deal because it's been very clear that almost all radio in the mainstream, almost all black radio, almost all Latino radio have capitulated themselves to Obama a long time ago. And that's the problem. And when we have journalists that are black, Latino, that are, some of them are progressive, they say they're progressive, and they allow their listeners for years and months to think that there's only two people running for president, to me that shows the level of where they're at and their immaturity and not allowing the people to have choices. So, you know, all I can say about that is that there's a reason that those outlets and those powers that be refuse to even have a debate that includes all the people running for president, that refuse to allow us on outlets like CNN, all the way to outlets like the Huffington Post that proclaim they're progressive. You know, and so it's been, so coming from a community organizer background, to me, this is nothing new. Like, I wasn't expecting to run and everybody was going to vote for me or anything. I'm not stupid. You know, I know how the system clearly works. I chose to do it particularly because I saw that hip-hop activism was being co-opted. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to stop it, but at least I was going to try to make a space for now what I'm going to call a new movement of hip-hop left, the hip-hop radical movement. Because unfortunately, now we even have to define ourselves in that term because hip-hop has so been co-opted, especially during this hype around Barack Obama and the Democratic Party. So that was my thinking, you know, into it and how I strategically come into it, because I don't even think ever that the vote can get us out of a situation. Voting didn't get us into where we're at. Voting's not going to get us out. It's a tool that we must use, but it's not the only effective tool to use, and it can't be used just on one day or every 2 years or every 4 years. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And it's funny that you say that, all the media outlets. I was listening to I can't remember what talk show I was listening to, but the brother who hosts the show always encourages people to email him during the broadcast. So he was telling people, you know, why they should go out and vote for Barack Obama. And he was like, well, there's only two choices, Barack and McCain. And I emailed him three times during the during the broadcast and said, Cynthia McKinney and Rosa Clemente are running as well. No response. Nothing, you know what I'm saying? Nothing at all, you know. And it seems like people have forgotten Sister McKinney. I'm like, man, how can you forget the sister? She was the first one told us that it was the whole thing they were telling us about 911 was a lie, and everybody called the sister crazy, you know. But it turned out that she was correct, you know what I'm saying?
That's the thing, brother. I mean, you know, I was shocked to see on the History Channel that they were playing American Blackout the other day.
They finally played it.
I was shocked. I was blown away, man. I mean, I jumped all over the room and everything, like, what? You know, because those of us who understand how the game is played and how the game is being skewed and the whole nine yards, there's a concerted effort to make sure that we don't get the medium to reach the masses of the people, because information is powerful, especially when you can articulate the information in the proper manner to get the so-called intellectual to understand what exactly is going on. But one thing that I have noticed, brother, and I want to say this, but I'm gonna say it very loosely, that there is a movement that is going around, that people are starting to wake up, and I don't know to what level it's going to get, but people know that something just ain't right. You know what I'm saying? And if at this time or this stage in life where the planets are realigning themselves, and those that are into the metaphysical realm of things are starting to see the change in the whole nine yards. Man, if at this particular time in life the correct information came out, it would be a pivotal point in this whole scheme of things, brother.
Yeah, well, that's what we definitely hope for. We've heard numerous. I just had a conversation with my wife and my children saying that we expect for a whole lot of white supremacists to try to, you know, like Sister Rosa said, be very, very aggressive.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe if Barack, I mean, because if we remember correctly, what's his name, Kerry, was ahead in the polls up until the night of the election. You know what
exactly.
I'm saying? As a matter of fact, they announced that Kerry won, but, you know, Bush ended up in the White House. And so anything could happen. I mean, Bush actually has the power to stop the election if he so desires. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me ask
he's already, George Bush has intervened in one of the states supporting the state's right to look at purging 3,000 more voters. And just on initial voter integrity, before I forget, there's already problems happening in Tennessee. And in fact, Cynthia McKinney on the 23rd sent a letter to the Division of Elections because it came to our attention that there were already flaws in the Tennessee touch screen voting, where people were saying they voted for Obama and they were going to McCain, and people said they voted for McKinney and they were going to Obama. You know, so like here you have a former Democratic congresswoman in there for 12 years that is sending out a letter saying, look, I know most of those votes are not for me. They're going to end up being Obama votes. But this is about voter integrity and voter election. It's not like the Green Party is trying to replicate the tricks of the Democrat or Republican Party. And it was in 2004 that the Greens sued along with the Independent Party when those votes in Ohio, in Franklin County, were not counted. And Kerry promised the Congressional Black Caucus that he would make sure that those votes were counted. And what, it took him 20 hours to give up on the election. At least Al Gore made him take it to the Supreme Court, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I wanted to interject on that, and I know you had a question.
I have one question. Have you is there any validity to the continuance of government law that was passed on October the 1st?
What
have
law?
You heard, I think it was the continuance of government law.
Yeah. I mean, that can any president can do that. Like they, I think that's the law around keeping like the same person in office. If I'm correct, is that what you're talking about?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be. It can be done in a time of emergency, but people should also be aware, right, that that the Army Times reported 6 weeks ago. That's the internal newspaper to the United States Army, that there is a brigade that just finished duty in Fallujah in Iraq that is deployed within the United States and ready to be called up during Election Day, because anything could go down, you know. And they've been internally deployed, which is actually the first time in United States history that publicly we know of in a brigade being internally deployed within the borders of the United States to deal with domestic disturbances. And they're essentially caught on non-active duty but can be called up. And now we have the recent this attack on this assassination attempt on Senator Barack Obama, but also the fact that they wanted to kill 88 black people and decapitate them and then get to Obama. And, you know, what I don't like about that is that I feel particularly the senator has a duty to say this is going down. You know, like this attack, these attacks are happening. How are we going to deal with them? Because I think in one sense, he speaks to the masses of the people every day, so he has a responsibility. And then we, on the other hand, who are true progressives and left, no matter how politically disagreement I am, I'm not going to allow for the white supremacist mentality to then attack him or his family. So it's like a really interesting time that we're in, and I think it's a good time for activists to say and show who we are as human beings. Like, we ain't trying to hurt the brother. We just adamantly disagree with every policy, but we also are not going to allow for this stirring lynch mob mentality. I just saw a video yesterday in a Sarah Palin rally where they're calling him the N-word.
Yeah,
so we have to think they're not just calling him that. That attack is going to come against us, and it's already been coming, but it's also going to come against particularly Latino people right now. See, because that's the quiet story in this whole last year. The amount of hate crimes has been rising against immigrants in this country, and we're in a time of class warfare. So we're in a time that we've always many of us have studied and we've researched and we've actually seen certain movements, but this is actually class warfare. This is actually domestic deployment. You have no right to privacy. Everything is consolidating at one moment. And they need, see, the country that wants to remain in power, the government, which includes Bush and, you know, the Democrats on the other side of the aisle, they want to keep some essence of power. And if a Barack Obama can be that new face of imperialism, if he could be that new palatable power to us as we increase in the numbers in this country, then, yeah, they're going to let him get up in there because he's representing their interests. But and it comes in a very pretty package at the end of the day. It comes on the dude that's 45. He can rock to Jay-Z. His wife is beautiful. All of that, look, we probably all be hanging out with him in Chicago on the South Side, you know, once in a while. But this is not a popularity contest. So I went to that because what George Bush and them are trying to do by saying we could have a continuance of power, I think he's sending a message particularly to local municipalities, because in New York City, the people for twice voted on term limits. And last week, the mayor of New York City, who is a billionaire, Mike Bloomberg, literally paid off people, and the city council went against over 4 million people that voted 4 years ago on term limits, and they voted on extending his ability to be mayor. So he's going to get to run again, and this time he's going to spend $2 billion to run for mayor because he's worth $4 billion. And Bloomberg, that's the essence of the economic everything of the world. Wall Street is falling apart. So Bush doing that makes it okay for Bloomberg to doing that, but both of them represent the same interests at the end of the day. And that's what's happening in this country, you know, and that to me is the thing we're not talking about right now. What are we going to do the day after this election, whoever is in office?
They do expect, like you said, they've already deployed, you know, the people just in case of some type of civil unrest to where maybe black people get mad he didn't get elected, you know what I'm saying, or white folk, you know what I'm saying. Well, we know they ain't there to protect us, you know what I'm saying. We're going to have to do that for ourselves. But white folk, you know what I'm saying, they the ones with the history of rising, serious. And then, like you said, we even see that now. I saw the video myself this morning. He's a nigger.
Yeah, you know, and it's women. And when you have white women, like, it's so often the white supremacy and KKK and that is always wrapped around the evil-looking white man. You know, when you think about it, who kept that culture going? The women teaching the babies, you know. And these are women that are poor. They've been laid off. There's no jobs. They're suffering. So, of course, every time, you know, white people are in a depression, we just need to look back at the depression and see the amount of lynchings that took place that have never been solved during the depression, you know. And for us to say it is not conspiracy, we just read a book from 40 years ago. We can see pictures of it, you know. And it's almost like we end up becoming the one that people are, you're crazy, why are you worrying about that? And, you know, and the reality is that not only are we right, history tells us that we're right. So.
Oh, yeah. Those
if they really want to check it out, they can get the book Without Sanctuary and see the pictures themselves from during the time frame of the Depression and stuff like that, where little girls and little boys are standing there marveling at the fact of a hanging black man up there with the castrations and the whole nine yards. But nobody, and that's the thing, nobody wants to talk about the indiscretions of the oppressive class. And in order to be accepted, you have to denounce that this thing ever happened or are capable of happening again. And this is something that has to be dealt with. And until it is dealt with, there can never be any racial harmony in this country, because you first got to make amends for that which you have done.
Yeah.
You know, when they dropped the bombs on Hiroshima, what did they do for the Japanese? They made amends. You know, so it's just, I mean, it's a beautiful a place and time where you can hear somebody that knows and understands this whole game, this gamut, and speak with fervor for the people and the benefit of the people. You know what I'm saying? So, Sister Clemente, my hat go off to you and Sister McKinney and the whole nine yards. And if I had the ability or the capability of putting y'all in there with the understanding that something or somebody that knows what time it is will be there to represent me. But, I mean, we're in the hell of America.
Yeah,
and only thing we can do is we said sing songs and hold hands.
Yeah. Drink to think, you know what I'm saying? That we really don't even have to look back as that far as the book Without Sanctuary, 24-year-old Brandon McClellan was drugged.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying, earlier this month.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Just like James Byrd.
Yeah, just like James Byrd, you know, in the same state, you know what I'm saying? So white supremacists are sending that message out, you know. And,
yeah.
Up, white supremacy. Sister Rosa, you've done a whole lot of work concerning our political prisoners as well. And one thing, you know, I sent out a text message a couple of weeks ago, you know, just being silly. I do that every now and then. I said, do you think after Obama gets elected, you think he'll grant Mumia a presidential pardon?
Well,
no. Answer supports this very seriously. Well, we can petition him to do so. I'm like, man, how many petitions we gonna sign?
I know. Yeah, that's not gonna happen. No. I mean, unless we're gonna wake up and it's gonna be a Disney story and everything changes. No, you know. I mean, you know, he already made a statement on Sean Bell when Sean Bell's murderers walked away, saying that we have to respect the laws and the police and the judges and all of them are good people and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, but I also think, like, it wouldn't matter what president. I mean, it would matter if Cynthia was there because she's been committed to that. But besides anyone else, like, right, we'd have to figure out another way, or how do we get these political prisoners out? What are the tactics that can be used on a local level that lead to state stuff? That, you know, that's the way we need to be dealing with political prisoners, as opposed to waiting for a president to sign, because the last time that happened was when Bill Clinton gave clemency to 11 Puerto Rican political prisoners, and, you know, it was a synergistic moment, because the reason he did it was because his wife was running for Senate. They knew already that she was going to get ready to run to be Senator of New York, and that was a very important issue to the Puerto Rican community in New York, and you cannot win in New York City without, as a senator, without having that Puerto Rican block for the most part. So, you know, but it was a good move for the organizers, because the organizers had chosen to begin to hold the elected officials accountable, and that was a 10-year movement. So we have to also be ready to prepare for the moments that we may get some victories, you know, if Obama were to win. Because if he does, then I like what Cornel West has been talking about lately. Cornel West actually has endorsed and is stumping for Obama, but has been, I guess, a sane in that, where he's not, like, has lost all his intellectual capacity and understand that he is in a situation that is, as we would call, a dichotomy. Like, he's running and making sure the man gets into office, but he's very critical of almost all his policies. But he feels that that the people are going to have to push him, and that if he doesn't respond, then the people have a right to respond. You know, and I think we have to figure out a way how there are going to be certain things that we want an immediate end to, immediate succession to, and how are we going to push them if we want to use the electoral political route. The other way is that we just have to get back into organizing, and I think a lot of us have lost the ability to know that no matter who's in the president's office, that the people have to be organized. I think that many people who are going to vote for Senator Obama really believe that, like, the next day is going to be all good. Like,
yeah, they do.
It's all good. You know, it's, he's in there, and we're going to give him 100 days. And the reality is that this economic crisis, we have not even seen the tipping point of this, because this government is still in there. The people who are part of the problem are still in the government, in the White House, in the finance, all of that. So we're really not going to know till they leave. You know, and I don't understand how, as a country, we're going to be $3 trillion worth of debt. How are we going to fund anything public, and not tax credits, but how are we going to publicly fund roads and schools and hospitals? Like, you know, we're heading into some serious crisis right now, you know, and I hope that people understand that there's going to be a lot of work that is going to need to happen on a very localized community level.
Yeah, it's going to have to happen. And even Obama himself said that no matter who is the president, the people are going to have to change the situations for themselves.
Yeah.
And that, and I, you know, I grew a lot of respect for that statement, you know. And,
yeah.
What do you all say as far as the, because there has been a push even in the nationalist community to vote for this cat. And, of course, you know, I myself, speaking personally for Jamato,
me and Cynthia, excuse me, have been attacked most famously by Emiri Baraka. Although, you know, Emiri Baraka has, I think he would definitely still define himself as a Marxist-Leninist with nationalist tendencies. But, you know, there's been many a people, whether it be from the nationalist community, from the black nationalist community, from the white progressive anti-war movement to the hip-hop community. I mean, I said we're crazy, we're egotistic. I mean, like, every bad word you could think of, you know. I mean, obviously, because we're women, crazy is, like, the best word that they, all the men seem to use. We're crazy. And, you know, like, again, I wasn't not expecting it. I wasn't expecting, though, the hatred and the virulent fervor to be like, just stop. You know, we were just like, people that I've known for years and 10 years stopped talking to me, or, you know, emailing things. And you're just like, what has happened? Like, have we really just lost our minds over that one man? Like, it can't,
yeah.
You know, and that's, yeah, and that's the thing, that whole Messiah complex. But for our generation, that's a bad thing. We shouldn't even be going there, because I understand more if there's a brother, sister that's 67, 60, 50, my parents, saying, yo, wait, this is a moment. Because no matter what, it is a historical moment, right? It's history,
and I can
right?
I see that symbology. We have a call.
Right.
Let's just snatch this call real quickly. 708, are you there?
Greetings, my brother Jamato. How are you?
Greetings, brother Shaka. How you doing?
Excellent. Hey, brother. How you doing?
Fantastic.
Wonderful, wonderful,
and greetings
wonderful.
Greetings to your guest, Rosa Clemente.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I've been listening, and I agree with what I've heard. I think one of the things that Barack Obama, even though I'm not campaigning for him, represents is hope for people who are hopeless. And so they're looking like a drowning man for a straw to hold on to something. And there's been a failure on the part of the nationalists, revolutionaries, Marxists, Leninists, from one end of the spectrum to the other, to offer something else. I mean, when the Soviet Union collapsed, and then you had the nationalist groups break out in Estonia and Uzbekistan, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, a lot of people were almost fed up. They started looking at other alternatives. Well, shucks, if Russia and the Soviet Union can't keep that peace together, then what chance have we? And so when you look inside of the black community in particular, that's what I'm representing, you find the deterioration, I mean, it's like a bombed out you know, neighborhood. I can't even say community because we're so disconnected. And so in that sense of hopelessness, people look for somebody that can offer them something. I mean, we haven't had a successful rebellion that galvanized, mobilized, and organized the masses, I mean, in so long. And then when the kind of pressure comes down, like that came against the Black Panther Party all over the country, you know, being assassinated, murdered. And then, you know, Malcolm murdered, King murdered, I mean, Mega Evers. People just, and they kind of give up. And so I was listening to Rosa. She was saying, hey, you know, I don't know. You know, the people just, you know, they just aren't your friends, your comrades, people that you've worked with in the past. You say 10 years? 10 years of working with somebody, now they're looking at you like, you know, what are you talking about? Stop talking like that. So we need to reevaluate what is going to take place on that local level that even, you know, Barack Obama has said we need to focus on. And I think that those on this line have agreed. We need to do something on the local level and develop our strategies. Unfortunately, though we have oftentimes talked about everything from the melting pot to, you know, minority unity, oppressed unity, and so forth and so on. I mean, believe it or not, the African is on his own. The black man is on his own. Now, at some point where he begins to stand up and do some things that are constructive to mobilize and organize the mass of people, other people will pitch in, other people will support him, other people will encourage him. But he's got to, on that local level, begin to do some things on his own, self-reliantly. And so what are those things that need to be done? I mean, if, in fact, we talked about the history of our race, we find examples of those men and women who have come before us. Nat Turner mm-hmm. came up with a plan. And remember, these insurrectionists, Gabriel Prosser, I mean, they weren't just content to remain inside of America. I mean, they were talking about ships that they could sail to Haiti after the revolution, because ultimately the African has got to have Africa. He's got to have Africa. And that means that the resources that were used to build the Industrial Revolution for Europe, that was used to build America, has got to be back in the hands of Africans. Not to do what they've done, but just to be in a sense of control. Now, if you need to control a nation, then you need to control a community. Because if you can't control a community, you can't control a block, then, I mean, it's like Kwanzaa. Maulana Karinga came up with the principle of Kwanzaa, but it's not one block. One block that embraces the Nguzo Zaba. So those who promote any other kind of philosophy, not one block. Nation of Islam doesn't control one block. I mean, the closest we got was Yahweh Ben Yahweh, but then that broke up into some confusion because it's just based solely on economics and religion. So that's what, you know, I'd like to, you know, I'd like for us to entertain, and that is, I mean, even the gangs, the street organizations, the street nations, I mean, they're territorial enough to say, I want this piece right here, and it fights you tooth and nail for it. But the nationalists haven't claimed a community they can organize and mobilize and protect. And so the hopelessness, the insecurity, the lack of safety and protection of our men, women, and children, I mean, some fundamental things are jumping off. That's why Sister Hudson, Jennifer's nephew can get killed like that. That's why a whole lot of folks getting killed, because we're not even at the point where we care enough or think enough or can plan enough or organize enough to do one fundamental thing that keeps us safe. And so we need to, again, look at what are those things that need to be done on the local level. And I'd like to ask Sister Rosa, what does she think needs to be done?
Yeah, I'm glad you took us to a transition period, because for me, I hope that what I'm going to be doing after this election, I'm going to leave the country in the essence of really traveling to Latin America and parts of Africa to begin to build movements internationally. You know, like I feel if we have no borders with globalization, then we can't have borders with movement building, and that we now have to resist on a global level. And I believe that young people on the continent, particularly Senegal, Nigeria right now, and Ghana, and then almost all of Latin America right now, it's the popular movement, it's the young people, but particularly in Latin America, that have pushed to put in presidents and people that will nationalize efforts in support of the people. What's happening in Venezuela, in Bolivia, in Paraguay, in Brazil, in Chile, those are lessons now that we as young people have to learn, because I just feel that that's where the movement is coming. Like, the movement is going to cross into our borders. And in the last particularly 20 years, I don't think that there's been enough leadership training. There has not been enough intergenerational connections on a mass level with brothers and sisters from the 60s and 70s that are still doing work today. They have lessons that they really need at this point to just tell us, not even, they have to tell us certain things, you know. So that's what my vision has been. And going to Canada, there's amazing movements in Canada also, and obviously that when I say Latin America, that includes Mexico and the continuing movement of the Chiapa, of the Zapatistas, that continues to grow, you know. So I look forward to the day after the election, because I feel the last 18 months have we just been caught up in a reality TV situation, and I think with the people that have not supported McKinney and Clemente, there's various reasons, but I think from the hip-hop community and some of the left community, it's also not wanting to support the Green Party, which to me is a very valid reason. It wasn't like the Green Party until recently was any different the way it demographically looked like the Democratic Party, right? Like, we can't expect that just because now Rose and Cynthia are running, then we get the masses of the people. That's why when Cynthia told me, this is not just about this election, we're going to build a movement, we're going to rebuild community, and we're going to use this as a base, literally, of supporting that movement building, as opposed to saying and going to the movement, like, hey, just come support us. No, we have to now show and prove why we would garner any type of support, and that at the end of the day, we're going to organize on a very local level. That's how I'm visualizing things right now.
Let me see if I understand what you just said. And excuse me, brothers, I do want to hear from you all as well. You said that after the election, one of the things that you envision is leaving the country and being involved in some of the movements that are taking place by young people in different parts of the world.
No, not leaving into being involved, going to learn movements, to have more international, international exchanges, but on a very, very geopolitical level.
Okay. And so what it sounds like is that we're going to transport either our desire to accumulate knowledge or our desire to do work outside of the country, which leaves the question of what happens in the country, on the grassroots, in the community, in the neighborhood level. And when we talk in terms of after the election, I don't know how the election becomes the kickoff point for movement. In other words, I mean, we've been around here, hopefully, organizing and mobilizing our people as long as we've been conscious, and so maybe kick that up to another level, but not act as if after the election things start to happen or are going to happen.
No, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. What I mean internationally is that, particularly as young people, we are taught that everything that we do within these borders is usually the correct thing to do. A lot of young people who are activists need to leave this country and look at what's going on globally, because however we choose to do movements in the United States, on a local level, we still are global people, and we've lost that in our generation. Now, there's a connection with that, with hip-hop, and how internationally hip-hop is actually a political movement that is gaining strength. Like in Senegal, there's been a young block of hip-hop activists that have now gained parliamentary status. They're changing things there on a very local level. We can learn a lesson from that. That's what I mean. We need to get out more. We need to not think that movements in this country are the be-all, end-all of how we can create community change. The belly of the beast is always the best place to do work, so I believe in that. Secondly, when I mean after the election, I use a lot of that language, particularly because I'm probably on email a lot and do a lot of listservs on our MySpace and Facebook. And a lot of young people who are voting for Barack Obama, and this I'm saying about young people specifically, let's say under 37, there's a culture out there that truly thinks that when they go and vote, that's it. And as a community organizer, I know that's never it. You know, like, that's, you don't begin the movement the day after. So if I use that language, I should have clarified it more, because I'm so on these social networks where I'm talking to 10,000 young people sometimes in a night, and they'll, you know, in these big massive chat rooms. And that's the interesting, that the Senator Barack Obama tapped into that better than any other candidate, reaching young people, unfortunately, where a lot of them are right now in front of a computer. And me, I don't like to be an email revolutionary, but so I guess in being online a lot, I've used the language that a lot of them are using, this site, or putting out a politic that some of them have put out, that this is the most political thing that it can do. That they vote for Obama, they've done their job in life as organizers. And I've been trying to, you know, squash that. And that's why I said the day after, I think it's going to be incumbent on my generation to say, this work is just beginning. It's a continuum of work that we have to pick up. So I hope that clarified it more.
Thank you, brothers.
And I'd like to just I'd like to say, you know, recently I just got back from Ghana, and there is a movement to be reckoned with that is going on the other side of the water, and in order to not minimize what's going on, because we know that white supremacy and stuff like that is a global entity. It's not just locked into the United States. This is global. So we have to learn, I guess, as activists, how to understand what is going on outside of our own homes and how we can incorporate what is going on into the mainstream of what is going on with us to connect all the dots, because it's going to take efforts that some of us have never even heard of people that are doing great works and making great strides, especially in the minds of the youth. Cause contrary to popular opinion, that's where the game is coming from, because most of our so-called intellectuals or so-called elite or elders or whatever are locked into that box where their mind won't even allow them to think outside of the box. So some of these young people are thinking in ways and means that most of the older people will never even get to. So we have to utilize and tap into that talent. And like Sister said, you know, Brothers Keeper is a performance group. And a lot of the children that we reach, we would not even get to if we were not speaking their language and dealing in the methods and ways that they receive information, which music is one of the first ways you can get to the mind of the youth. So the sister brought up a very valid point of having to take this, think of this thing as being global. Or think of this thing as being international, because we are, like I say, in the belly of the beast in the United States. We know that the media is controlled, the outlets are controlled. But one thing that we learned about, especially being here in Memphis, with the artists, the music, It's like when 3-6 Mafia was underground, everybody was bumping 3-6 Mafia right here in Memphis, Tennessee. But nobody outside Memphis even knew who 3-6 Mafia was. But now they're so-called on the mainstream now. But they started underground. So our grassroots movements, our ear to the ground, and our ability to gain the respect and the ears of the youth is going to be our only way to make some major strides in this thing.
I was watching a documentary a couple of weeks ago, and there was this female said, in America, it's just funny how the people are afraid of the government. In my country, the government is afraid of the people.
For the people. I think I saw that documentary. I don't know what it was. But I have to go on to another radio show.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yeah, I thank you for your patience. And thank you to Brothers Keepers. I think, I don't even remember, we met a while ago. And
yeah.
It's been a minute, and I'm so glad you guys are doing your thing there. And, you know, I encourage everybody to get out there with a video camera, put your stuff on YouTube. If you are going to vote, one of the things we could do right away is to monitor these elections. And, you know, work is work, and we'll be organizing the day after, and you know, just continuing to build movement, because I think particularly that there is a concerted group of people in this country that actually have the solutions that we need, and it is a growing multiracial working class people's movement, and I think it's actually going to manifest into the dream Dr. King had about a poor people's campaign. And if that can happen, then I'm feeling good about things, and I'm very hopeful. So thank you for having me on, and folks can go to my website, rosaclemente.com, and we'll see everybody out there, and we'll talk soon. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, sister. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Peace.
Peace.
Yeah, that's that was Rosa there, and we definitely thank her for sharing her time with us. No, she has a very busy schedule, and I can't even remember how we met the sister. I think we were in New Orleans doing some work together.
Yeah, I think so.
Not me or what, but it's been a minute. Real cool people, though. But, she is correct, and we already know we're going to have to, you know, organize on a better basis. And like Brother Malcolm said, Brother Shaka, we're going to have to look at our brothers and sisters elsewhere and see how they gain their freedom. You know, because, I mean, it's a stagnant thing.
Well, I think
over
that Elhaj Malik El Shabazz taught us that a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we've done that. Now it's a question of what are we going to do with the knowledge that we have? Because,
right.
You know, if we have to reinvent the wheel, if we have to start all over, if we have to act like Malcolm didn't teach and Malcolm didn't die, you know, standing bravely for his people, if Garvey didn't live and Garvey didn't teach and die standing bravely for his people, then, you know, I mean, it was all in vain. And it wasn't in vain. And so that's why I try to stress the urgency of what is it that we need to do, you know, right now. In fact, it almost will boil down in many instances, what do we do in the next hour? Brother Say went to Ghana, beautiful, and saw the movements on the continent of Africa among the Ghanaian people, among the Ghanaian youth. And you hear the spirit of, you know, we're not afraid of government. The government's afraid of us. Now what? Because it means now we got to transform our thoughts, our philosophies into action, and, you know, to not take away from Brothers Keeper. I mean, it's, you know, my hat's off to Brothers Keeper, and I always acknowledge the strides that are being made there among the young people with the music. Even bringing Rosa on, I mean, testifies to the work that's being done. I just, you know, for those who aren't doing anything, I always try to, you know, encourage them that, you know, we've got to begin to take some action, you know, move from thought to action and move on scientific lines to get some things done immediately. And so and without excuses, I mean, you know, the government is no excuse. Black folks, violence, drugs, no excuse. I mean, the price will be pain, blood, and death, still no excuse. People aren't ready. Well, maybe not. Maybe they are. Maybe they're ahead of us. Maybe they're taking the position to go out here and take the streets because we're not taking the streets. And so maybe they're ahead of us, not behind us. And so in the end, as we move towards these days of significance inside of our community and among our race, you know, how do we seize the opportunity to do something great and grand? In other words, if Alma Marcus Garvey was able to do what he did in the 1920s without the aid of some of this technology that we're speaking on now, that we utilize now.
Let me interject this one statement by Sister Harriet Tubman.
Mm.
She says she could have freed more slaves if they had only knew that they were slaves. Sometimes we think we have amalgamated into a new creature here in the United States. And time again, they show us that we are still on the same level. One of our great historians once told us sometimes that he almost thinks that anybody that's over the age of 29 years old and they don't have a sense of what's going on in America need to be eradicated and start with the youth. Sometimes it's almost to the extreme that we have to understand that there is so many of us who don't want to wake up. And the only thing that we can do is push and push the youth to get involved. Because one thing we have learned, we're working with our young gang, so-called gang members, is that once you transform that mindset and you let these children know that they are loved and they are needed, and this is what you need for them to get into doing. And when we show them the documentaries of Garvey and Malcolm and stuff like that, these young men are then empowered with the understanding that they got to go out and make a positive change instead of a negative change in the community. And I love my brothers and sisters so much, and I want to give them so much credit. But as an activist out here in the street, you know that for the most part, when you try to impart information to people that don't want the information, you are met with a brick wall.
That's true.
So then what do you do? When you are met with that brick wall and you meet that opposition, then the only thing you can do is try to make that corner to get to them babies behind.
You know, revolutions weren't initiated by the masses. It was usually
exactly.
That core group and that cadre that got together. Now, in the United States, where there's over 40 million of us, there has got to be 300,000-400,000 conscious men and women when you combine all the old and new Garveyites, when you look at all the Malcolmites, when you look at all the Nkrumahs, when you look at all the members of the Nation of Islam, followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, when you look at all the Moorish Americans, when you look at all the Republican New Africans, when you look at all the Panthers, new and old, come on, bro, 400,000 people in this country. And when you go through Memphis and you really, really sit down with some of these elders and sit down with some of these folks who ain't out picketing anymore, they're not marching anymore, they're not shooting anymore, they're just sitting back because they're frustrated, they're tired, and they don't think anybody's really serious. If we really scratch beneath the surface, we'll find that the people are there. Alma Marcus Garvey went through 38 states before he sat down. 38 states. He traveled a whole year talking to people, seeing where the consciousness was, seeing if anybody had a plan. And then he went back and he started organizing. And then 2.5 years, less than 2 years, he had a mass movement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if...
We're about to run out of time on here. The show is on, but it's not streaming. Actually, the show is hung up now.
I'm sorry.
No, it's cool. It's cool. I mean, you know, hey, it happens.
Man.
You know, so, we definitely thank everyone for calling in. You all still on the line?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Nothing showing up on the screen. Oh, dog, I didn't mean to do that. But nothing showing up on the screen now. But we definitely had a good show. And matter of fact, we'll just continue this conversation on next Tuesday, you know.
Yes, sir.
No, we definitely got to get free. Brother Shaka, we definitely thank you for calling in.
It's my pleasure.
Man, because you done put something on my mind, brother. I mean, I'm gonna have to sit down and get me a cup of coffee on this one.
Oh yeah.
Because you're absolutely correct. Garvey did it, and I know he ain't got half the technology we have now, but I'm still battling with, you know, how do you deal, you know, how do you reach those? Because I mean, we've run into some brothers right here in the city that have spoke and said and did everything that we thought was the correct thing to say and do, and not feel or do half of what they said they was, you know. And matter of fact, was teaching incorrect information. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, I'm confused, brother. You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna leave you with this. I think that the African today is spoiled.
Yeah.
In other words,
yeah.
We have been given so much. We have been given too much. I mean, we have so much that we can do so much with, and yet we are spoiled because we still have one foot in the white man's house, and we don't want to turn that loose. With all that we have, we still don't want to turn him loose. So one of the things that we need to do is really sit down and look at what have we really been left with, and how valuable is it, and how spoiled are, how much do we still really love white supremacy? I mean, how we really, really, and truly love it.
Give it up, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I ain't going to lie, brothers. I was very, 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 very disheartened by the nationalist community talking about vote for Obama. You know what I'm saying? And I understand, you know, now, I take into account that he sat up under Jeremiah Wright for 20 years. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say that he sat there and didn't learn anything. You know what I'm saying? I understand that. And I understand you can't run for a mainstream office such as the presidency of the United States and get up there and holler free Mumia. You know what I'm saying? Free all political prisoners. I understand that. But we have to look at this brother's track record. You know what I'm saying? He's in Chicago. Jeremiah Wright's in Chicago. Oprah's in Chicago. Farrakhan's in Chicago.
Jesse's
look at
in
the
Chicago.
Condition of Chicago. You know what I'm saying? Still look at the condition of the city with all those people there. You dig
sure.
what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know, that's my point.
No, I'm not, like I said, I'm not campaigning for him.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not spending a whole lot of time even thinking about him because I don't have any conception that he will really and truly make a difference. If he lives, if he makes it, because I think those white folks are going to do the switcheroo in the last minute when they walk into that polling place, and that little game will be over.
Yeah.
But if he did, we'd still be faced with what do those of us who call ourselves activists begin to do, to take what we're doing, not that we're not doing anything, because, again, my hat is off to Brother's Keeper, but how do we take it up 10 levels?
Yeah, how do we amplify this thing? Yeah.
Yes, yes, how do we expand it? Because we're not doing enough. We're not doing enough. As long as you're still on the plantation,
man.
I'm still on the plantation,
man.
Then that means that we haven't found it yet. We haven't found a way to get off the plantation. We have not found a way. We haven't. We haven't found a way to become a maroon. We haven't ran away yet. We haven't, you know, we haven't vindicated Nat Turner. I mean, they chopped his body up and made purses and all kinds of things as little keepsakes and souvenirs and whatnot. He hasn't been vindicated yet because we're still on the plantation. So, I mean, our leaders, I mean, the great ancestors that we've had, they're waiting on us. And so we've got to figure this piece out, and we can't figure it out by ourselves. You know, we've got to come together and sit down and map this piece out, look very closely at it. If we got to look at what are you getting off the plantation? Doing 50,000? You doing 100,000? Okay, fine. How do you get 100,000 working for the liberation of your people? Don't say it can't be done. The Alma Marcus Garvey made 100,000 a year off of his speeches. And people were paying nickels and dimes and quarters and 50 cents. $100,000 a year.
Look at Farrakhan. Farrakhan is making a living off of what he's doing.
And the members of the Nation of Islam. You get a bunch of papers. You sell 1,000 papers. It costs you 50 cents a piece, let's say, and you sell 1,000. That's $500 a week. That's $2,000 a month. And then if you're only eating one meal a day, my God, come on now.
Hey, you ain't spending a lot of groceries, is you?
No, and then if you're buying collective, because when you go and buy some groceries, you even have either having that big old van that drops off food for the poor people, then your folks go and get some, or either you're buying wholesale, or you're hooked up with your brother down there that's got the farms, in the South. So we've just got to sit down and map this piece out. We can't keep going from year after year after year and don't have a master plan that frees us. It gets us off that plantation. You got to sell 1 million red, black, and green buttons. 1 million red, black, and green flags. Everybody doesn't have a flag.
Man, look, I remember we was talking to some sister. The sister was saying that brothers, y'all do so much work, but y'all don't consider y'all selves a business. Y'all don't run y'all self like a business. And I got to thinking about it, and we don't. We give away.
Are you all incorporated? Y'all incorporated?
No.
501c3?
No.
Okay, but listen, I know how it is sometimes, and, I'm a little older than Jamalo anyway, and a lot of brothers in the movement tended to not want to do that, not want to have that paper trail, not want to be incorporated, and so forth and so on, but that period is over. Now, I have a brother here in Chicago who is a master when it comes to that paperwork. In other words, he can show you how to put that 501c3 paperwork together in such a way that you get it, because there's certain things that the feds look for to determine if you should get a 501c3. And that's the way we have to go. And that's one of the things I'm doing now, is I'm working with grassroots organizations and saying, hey, let's get your paperwork together. Because anybody that may want to support you, when they look at your paperwork and see it's not in order, it's like, man, that's foolishness. That's not serious. So some of the brothers who have good hearts, some of the sisters, they have good hearts, but they're millionaires, and they don't play, and they don't want anybody, hurting them and what they've done, because they're making their family strong. But they'll come to the table. You think with all of the work and the good things that you do, you can't bring people to the table to listen to you? Of course you can. But make sure that the table is neat. Make sure the table's squared away, or you'll run them away.
Yeah, you're right.
They don't want to hear no foolishness nowadays, because we need new methods to accomplish old goals. The fervor doesn't leave. The enthusiasm, the fire, the determination doesn't leave. It's just that we have to use new methods to accomplish old goals. So if that makes sense, then, yes, let us continue to dialogue. Let's continue to work together. But look, you got me on WRBG, right? We haven't even sat down and figured out how to make some money.
What happens
is, and it happens to our spiritual brothers and sisters just as it does our nationalist brothers and sisters, we are so involved with the passion of helping others that we take the focus off self. But it says, physician, heal thyself. Charity starts at home and then it spreads abroad. You can't help me. You can't transport the liberation across the continent, across the planet, and can't do anything at home. It has to start at home. And every T has got to be crossed. Every I has got to be dotted. Even if you have to stop and say, let me take, account of what is going on in my life, so that everybody that's around me understands what I'm doing. Other than that, you'll confuse the people that love you. You'll confuse them. They're like, why are we starving? Why we got to do without this? And you got the brilliance of the ancestors that built the pyramids, that gave their women, emeralds, great gems, satin and linen and silk, and I ain't got that. how you going to be a descendant of them and you can't do what they did? And so it just means that when we understand Marcus Garvey, we understand Garvey he taught the gospel of success. The reason that people supported him was, the most brilliant men and women on the planet, African men and women on the planet. Even white folks would have loved to have given him all the support that they could. Why? Because he taught the principles of success, and the principles of success are good for anybody and anything. And that's why he was successful. So he wasn't just successful in terms of building a mass movement. He was successful in everything he touched, and everybody around him knew it. He was so successful in his thinking that he radiated it. You touch his hand, and they talked about how it was like electricity went through your body touching the man. You stare into his eyes. Didn't Du Bois say the man's eyes reflected intelligence, which means you don't do stupid stuff. You are brilliant in your operations. And so if we're in Rome, then we have to understand the principles that exist in Rome until we get back home. We can't die in Rome. We can't let Rome overtake us. We got to understand the principles that exist in Rome. We don't understand just African history and the African reality. We understand them all, because we might end up like that Rosa was saying. We might end up in Brazil, and we got to understand what's going on in Brazil. We might end up in Ghana. We need to understand Ghana from top to bottom. So there's got to be a way you can get paid for that. You can earn an income by studying and sharing and teaching what you know. The masses of people will follow us because of our intelligence. That's what they're looking for, somebody who understands the world in which they live and what to do in it. And they'll compensate. They'll take care. We've been taking care of preachers. We've been taking care of teachers. We've been taking care of the pharaohs. We've been taking care of everybody who we thought was our leader, teacher, and guide. And they'll do that for us, but we just got to be leading, teaching, and guiding. Take it to another level. Cross the T's, dot the I's, brothers.
Got to make it happen. Got to make it happen.
And we got to get on that soon, too.
Yes.
It's true.
Yes. Because what you all have, oh, man, Jamal, I just listened to some of those songs. I'm like, man, I got a sister now mad at me because she came on my show. I played one of your songs, and she's like, Saga, how do I get that song? Well, what had happened was she called me on one of my numbers, and she left her email address. I couldn't even read it, and she hasn't been back on the show to let her know. Sister, I'd be happy to give you Jamalo's information so he can tell you how to hook up and get this information, but she hasn't gotten back with me. It's just the power what you have, the power that you have. My brother, sucks, man. I mean, Cynthia McKinney, man, she can't touch y'all. She done, you know, maneuvered her way into a position to be on a campaign trail somewhere, but we're on a campaign trail, too. Now, Marcus Garvey found a whole lot of people on campaign trails when he showed up. But when he got on his piece, they stopped going to the meetings of the other folks and started attending his mass meetings.
Yeah.
They start reading the newspapers of other people and start reading his newspapers. And so Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael say, hey, whoever's correct, let them win the masses. They will win the masses. And that's what we need to do, think in terms of the masses of people. What do we do? And so if you and I can get together and lay this piece out, man, within a year or 2 years, our worlds will change.
Yeah,
our worlds will change.
That needs to happen expeditiously. We so thank you for calling in, Brother Shaw.
All right, it's been a pleasure, brothers.
Phone. I don't know what these folks be doing.
All right.
I'm saying, yeah, that's cool. Right. We'll sit down and wrap off their lines one day soon.
Okay. All right.
All right.
You guys be cool on the internet, man.
All right, peace, brothers.